What's up, everybody? We have 10-ish minutes, as usual, here, and Mr. Ryan Muckenhearn's across the table, so you know it's going to be a good one, and actually, not only is it going to be a good one, it's also going to be one of the most important things you've heard all day. So if you're listening to this in the morning, you're not going to hear really anything else this important the rest of the day, so you might as well just head back home, crack a beer, and just sit back and relax.
My goodness.
Just call it.
Yeah. We did you a favor. You're welcome, everybody.
Does that mean we get to do that too, Jim?
Yeah, in the future.
It's on Saturday.
Yeah.
All right. So, Ryan.
Yes.
Weighted gun vices.
Yes.
That's something we see a lot of people go out and use during the sight-in process, during some sort of a process where they're checking something and they want to eliminate themselves from the equation, essentially, right? They want to see basically what the gun is capable of if they weren't even there. And it's an apparatus which you set your gun in. It is weighted in order to not fly around as you pull the trigger. And it kind of locks it in place.
Just clamps it.
Yeah.
It sounds, Jim, it sounds like some sort of torture device, which really is maybe kind of accurate because it's kind of torturing your firearm.
It is a bit torturous. So, Ryan, we actually recommend against the use of this type of equipment.
Exactly.
And this is probably one of those things where, you know, we're going to get a few people that disagree with us. That's okay. But at least
below.
Yeah, disagree. Actually, yeah, yeah. Only agree with us below. If you disagree, just take your comments. No, I'm just kidding. But all right, let us hear us out here.
Yeah.
All right, so Ryan, explain why it is that we don't recommend.
I'm going to lead off with a car analogy. Because this is the best one that I have, because we get this call a lot, and especially now it's late July, people are getting ready to head out into the field, so they're getting their guns sighted in for the upcoming big game seasons. Imagine driving a manual transmission car, and you want to do a burnout, okay? So you push your clutch in, you put it in gear, you redline it, and you drop the clutch. In typical fashion, wheels would break loose, big cloud of smoke, we peel off into the night.
This is all sounding like really good stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know where how we're going to get back.
You're
to
not
the part
talking, Jim,
recommend.
Out of weighted gun vices,
this
right?
Correct. I'm going to turn the tables. So that goes on. Freebird's playing. You peel off down the county road and you have a good time. Safety first, please. Now do that same process, but put a brick wall in front of your vehicle. Put it in gear, clutch in, redline, drop the clutch. What happens? We have this enormous transfer of torque energy from the motor to the transmission to the drivetrain to the wheels. And then the typical thing that should happen is the vehicle propels forward, dissipating that energy. And if it's well built, it shouldn't blow up. When we can't move forward, when we can't dissipate that energy, if we're lucky, the wheels break loose and we just stay stationary. If we're not lucky, all of a sudden we like break a U-joint, break a drive shaft, blow a transmission, bend a rod.
Say we've got mega sticky tires.
Yeah. Catastrophic failure, right? So with these weighted gun vices, while they are convenient and they do take recoil out of the equation, which is generally what we see people gravitating, you know, towards them for, when you fire that weapon, that recoil energy has to go somewhere. And the correct place for it to go is through you, the shooter, acting as a spring, dissipating that energy into the ground. When we have that rest there and we pull the trigger, that recoil impulse goes through the gun and bounces right back off of the thing that's capturing it in the rear or clamping it up front, dumps it right back into the system. And from the optic side of things, what we generally see happen is like inside of your optic, when you fire your weapon, things are flying around. They're supposed to. They're designed to do this. But they're not doing it at the right rate and frequency. And we see lens displacement. We see erector tube failure. We see turrets even manipulate. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to think, like when you put resistance, like enough resistance to turn a turret and you feel how much that takes, to think that you could do that without touching the turret is pretty wild. In even worse scenarios, we see base screws shear off due to the weight of the scope and these small fasteners that hold these base screws on. We see action screws shear. We see stocks split. More interestingly, we generally see not great accuracy. And this is kind of very interesting because it's somewhat counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you think, okay, you've got this nice stable shooting platform, which they are, and you're eliminating that human error component. Well, when you pull the trigger, right, your barrel is going to flex and whip like a noodle.
Mm-hmm.
We're now interrupting that natural process by dumping that energy, that impulse back into it. And now that frequency in which that barrel reverberates and moves is changed wildly.
Yeah. You effectively have a different tune to your rifle.
100%.
When it's in a gun vise versus when it's being held by you.
Yeah, and we talked about barrel tuners before, a variety of different types of barrel tuners. And I would actually venture to guess, Ryan, even if you were able to get like a rock solid zero, right? You've got it in the weighted gun vise, you get this rock solid zero, you adjust your turrets. It might be off when you actually shoulder the rifle and shoot it naturally in your hunting or regular shooting scenario.
Yep.
You don't have a zero.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is.
False zero.
Yep. And it's kind of, a lot of this bleeds into archery, kind of, too. So I'm not a good archery shooter. What I have noticed is that depending on how I hold and touch my bow, put torsion and torque on it, the grip strength I have when I'm holding on to the grip of my bow, and really any of the other contact points, if I change them shot to shot, my grouping is very erratic. Similar principle here.
Yep.
The bow really can't be held hard. It's got to be almost just kind of cradled and held in tension in the palm of my hand. And as minimal points of contact on that equipment as possible when I take that shot. And it has to be repeatable. The weighted shooting rests kind of do the same or similar things when we're pulling the trigger. And this all happens in like a millisecond. And so for the folks that are going to be like, whoa, 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 hold the phone. I've been shooting out of one of those for 20 years. You may not see an issue. And we've tested this too. In fact, Travis Baran in our NPD team and I headed out with our Barrett M99, which is a 50 cal. And we put like 100 pounds on one of these devices so that it was completely immovable. And we shot, I don't know how many rounds of 50 BMG, a lot. No ill effect. Scope was fine. I've used them with lighter weight rifles that have maybe a little faster recoil impulse and cataclysmic failure. Mm-hmm. And every year, once we start getting close to hunting season, the number of calls that we have come in where folks are like, my optic does not hold zero. And we start going through the checklist, ring placement, ring torque, ring style, bases secured, ammunition, muzzle devices, are they attached securely, are they loose? And one of the last questions is, are we shooting out of one of these weighted devices? Yeah. And if that answer is yes, the first thing that we recommend is take that out of the equation. Switch to a bipod in a rear bag or switch to sandbags in a rear bag. Literally anything stable except these devices that capture and contain the recoil of that rifle. And more often than not, the follow-up is, it shoots good.
Mm-hmm. And those things that you mentioned, grab a couple of sandbags, use a bipod with a rear bag. Mm-hmm. Using something like that, you can still achieve a really good zero. And in my opinion, too, the other thing is you can get behind the gun more comfortably and more closely to how you would be shooting within the field. And so you take out even mechanical accuracy of the fire. Let's not even, you know, get into that because as we've discussed, that will and can be and likely will be affected. But also just your accuracy as a shooter. In my opinion, like you were talking about with the bow, why set everything up perfectly and practice not the same way that you're going to do it in the field? And then when you go out in the field, you do it a different way when it really counts.
Yep.
That would be, I mean, there's so many analogies that you could go into. It's like some Olympic sports player wouldn't practice one way, and then when it actually comes down to the final hour, do everything completely differently and expect the same results. It's just not the way things work.
Well, and I think also you look at, I mean, a lot of folks, including myself, whatever, you have limited time to practice, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe a significant portion of your practice time would be actually zeroing that rifle, and why take that away from yourself?
Yeah, well, and I think some people, they look at that limited time and they think, well, I don't want to fuss around with me getting shaky. I don't want to fuss around with all this stuff and have to be chasing groups around. So if I can just lock it in place, you know, shoot a couple of groups, make adjustments, and be done with it, then that's great. They actually think it'll save them time.
Then I know.
But what we see so often is that it increases the amount of time and frustration that you have because you have these mysterious head scratcher. Open up, you know, opening up groups. You've got, it's not tracking the way that you think it should be. And energy is just such a weird thing. You
oh,
know?
Yeah.
Like it, I mean, there's the whole law of the conservation of energy. It doesn't disappear, it just transfers into other things.
Yep.
And so, and I think when people hear about, like you're talking about how things inside of a scope move under recoil, that's not a fault of the optic. It's supposed to do that. If it didn't do that, it would break way more often. And it's the same way, you know, like when you're talking about shooting and you know, the barrel whips like a noodle. I think a lot of times people don't realize that stuff moves in real life.
It has to.
It has to. Because if it doesn't, I mean, and yeah, you're bringing up the car analogy, which I was thinking on. You know, a lot of people talk about adding power, adding stiffness to the chassis, all this stuff, and then like putting really sticky tires on a car or something like that, and then they start breaking things. And it's because the energy has to go somewhere.
Yep.
It's going to find the point of least resistance, which is usually the little things that are holding everything together, like little action screws, little ring screws, little tiny fasteners all throughout your scope that are very precise and designed to recoil in a very specific way and take energy in a very specific way.
Well, I'll throw this out there too. Those are little things that are not obvious things all the time either. So now you've kind of created this, like you said, this mysterious thing, or you're trying to ferret out like, well, what the heck could it be? And it actually, maybe on the surface, it looks fine, but then it's not fine. Mm-hmm. You got a headache on your hands.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not many people out there with just sort of the average knowledge of optics are going to think, oh, yeah, what's going on is my, you know, erector unit and the gimbal, and there's a leaf spring in there, and that must be... I mean, that's just... It's, we don't blame anybody for not thinking.
Well, I'd say
it,
this...
It's, just,
it's not like this is like a vortex thing. Like, we'll get folks that come in like, hey, I'm having all sorts of trouble with my scope and my system, X brand, whatever brand, right? Like, I'm, you know, I want to look at one of yours. And then you guys start, you know, predominantly you guys, Ryan, in consumer sales. I mean, you're front lines with these, you know, asking them a series of questions. And it might not even, you know, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
We go, and like I said, we go through it every year too. And it's not just the scope thing either. And I want to touch on a quick example that I have without bringing this to 35 minutes. Gentleman had a bolt action straight wall cartridge gun that was giving him all kinds of fits. We took the gun, we zeroed it on the range, shot fantastic. He took it back, all kinds of fits. It didn't even have that much recoil either because it had a really efficient muzzle brake on it. And he was very comfortable and versed in shooting high recoil guns. I'm racking my brain on this, and he brings it in again, and it's the scope is starting to migrate in the rings. And I'm thinking, this is nuts. Like, they're good rings. They're torqued at proper values. Everything's buttoned down. And I start going through the system, and the action screws are completely loose. Like, they're holding on by nothing. They're threaded into the receptacle, but they haven't made it to the shoulder where they bottom out. Mm-hmm. And the muzzle brake is loose now. I'm thinking, what is the deal here? And so we run through everything, get it all reset, zeroed in, shoots fabulous. Like, minute of angle or better at 100 yards. Process repeat. We end up in the same boat and start going through this, you know, inquisitive nature here. Find out that he's shooting in one of these devices. And I start talking about what's happening here. And literally that interruption of that normal recoil sequence was loosening his action screws, allowing his action to move fore and aft in the stock, which is causing this kind of hammering action, which is allowing his scope to migrate, which in turn is then allowing his muzzle device to loosen up.
That's crazy.
Yep. So we went through everything, secured everything with thread locker on that, which could be thread locked, torque to spec, everything was set up. He's avoided that device, and it's never happened again. So it's not just an optical failure, but it's also firearm system failure too. Yeah. So,
and we've countless times too. If you're listening to this and you have a scope that's not a Vortex scope or something like that, and you're just, you know, you're scratching your head again, like we said. There's been all sorts of times where people have called and they're like, "Well, my XYZ isn't working, so I'm going to give you guys a try."
Yep.
And I mean, I know when I've been in your guys' shoes in the past, and I know what you guys do a lot of times is, well, hey, let's figure out first why that one's not working. Yep. Because if you're doing something that's just going to make any scope not work, you're going to get frustrated with us. You're going to get frustrated with the next company, the next company, the next company. So anyway.
Well, and also just frustrated in how you want to enjoy your optics and firearms life.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about limited time to hunt, shoot, whatever. I mean, you want to maximize that.
So, yeah. Now, I know there's a different thing out there than what we're describing, which is called free recoil, but I do kind of subscribe to the whole, like, you know, let the rifle recoil freely, as many of us do, you know, in terms of where your shoulder is and all that stuff. That's a different thing. But
Free Reezy.
That's what I was getting to. So hopefully this is maybe, if anybody out there was having issues that just couldn't quite figure out, maybe this has given you a little bit of an inkling to what it might be, something you could try. Yeah, I don't know. Take this info to the range, arm your friends with knowledge as well. And if you have any questions, as usual, hit us up in the comments below if you're watching on YouTube or over on Instagram at Vortex Nation Podcast. We would love to hear from you. And also if you're using anything that works really well, I mean, like we said, sandbags in a bipod or, you know, sandbags all around works great for us. If you found something else that's super effective at keeping the gun steady, but it's allowing the gun to recoil the way it wants. Yeah, let us know too. Be cool.
Cool.
All right. We'll see you guys on the next one.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.